Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome everyone to Redacted on this Wednesday. It's a crazy news day, and everyone is kind of flustered in the world right now because there is a high alert anxiety around what is actually happening right now. Drones intercepted over Iraq at this hour over a airbase housing American troops. Iran on high alert, United States on high alert, Russian President Putin just a short time ago with Xi Jinping says that he will attack U.S. aircraft carriers with long-range weapons if provoked. So we are watching the unfolding of World War III in real time right now.
Yes, we're going to talk about that. We're also going to look at what is not a military conference, but an economic conference, the Belt and Road Initiative, which is meeting currently in China. We have a guest coming from China. Carl Xia is going to join us. We're also going to talk about Australia and how they've decided they don't need to do any research on transgender medicine. They're fine with it. What is the controversy around that as well?
Also, why are ATMs disappearing all over the place and bank branches closing in Australia and the United States and all over the Western world economic-backed forum world? Let us know in the comments why you think ATMs are drying up by the thousands. This is an unbelievable story, really about central bank digital currencies, but we'll dive into all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Treasure Troller in our chat says, can't we all just get along?
I would like that.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? But that doesn't seem like it's available to everyone right now. So we've got a lot of busy news to get to tonight on this Wednesday. We're going to get to it. Thank you guys, though, so much for subscribing here on the channel. If you're new here, please just say hey and say hello. I'm new. I've never watched your show before. We do this show every day live at 4 p.m. Eastern time. We try to cover the stories the mainstream media doesn't or totally ignores largely. And we try to navigate through all of the propaganda and the clown world that the Western media puts out there. So thank you guys so much for subscribing. If you do subscribe, your name will pop up here on the big screen live. We're live on Rumble and on YouTube.
That's right. You can also subscribe for free to our newsletter. It comes out every day that this show comes out, Monday through Thursday. We sort of plan it so the newsletter comes out in the morning, about 9 a.m. Eastern time. And then you can have this show in the afternoon so you can bookend your day with Redacted News. You go to redacted.inc and type in your email address, you'll get a validation email like that, and you click it, and then we are connected for free emails every day, Monday through Thursday. It, you know, is a great study guide for this show because it has a lot of original links to things that you might want to read up on so that you can participate in the chat. We love it if you do that. It also is a great place for you to get original links to these sources so you can think for yourself. Now, a lot of times when we write these the segments for this show, when we're doing research for the newsletter, we think to ourselves, what are the headlines here trying to shove down our throat? What is the hook we're supposed to believe? Is that true? So that's our MO here, is questioning main narratives and then looking behind and seeing what's being unsaid. So you can, obviously, you know that's what you get when you come here to Redacted. That is also what you get when you join the newsletter. Again, it's totally free. Just head on over to redacted.inc.
Well, we are on World War III watch. It's like a crock pot of war rhetoric right now, all thrown into one big pot. Just a few minutes ago, Chinese President Xi Jinping threw his support behind Russian President Vladimir Putin and the security of the Russian state, military security for Russia. A congressional report out this morning warning that a war with Russia and China is on the horizon and the U.S. should be prepared. Of course, we covered last night U.S. Foreign Affairs Committee, Committee Chairman Mike McCaul, authorizing President Biden to use force in a war against Iran. The Biden regime has also discussed using military force if Lebanon-based Hezbollah attacks Israel with rockets. All of these things unfolding in a World War III watch right now. We figured we'd bring in former UN weapons inspector, former U.S. Marine Scott Ritter, whose analysis on geopolitics and everything going on with these strategic war rhetoric right now is so important. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I guess maybe we start with just a few minutes ago, Xi Jinping throwing security support behind Russia. And what does this mean with this new congressional report warning that Russia and China, a war with both of those countries simultaneously, is on the horizon?
Well, first of all, let's talk about what Xi Jinping has done. You know, China and Russia, of course, have a relationship that's superior to any treaty relationship. It's a relationship without any boundaries. This is what they've been saying. But there's been some boundaries. I mean, China has been a little bit reticent about Russia's military incursion into Ukraine. It violates China's Westphalian principles of sovereignty and things of that nature. But I think China has been compelled to reassess its posture, not by Russia's actions, but by the collective West's actions, that China now recognizes that this struggle between Russia and Ukraine isn't about Russia against Ukraine. It's about Russia against the collective West, against NATO, against the United States. And then China has to evaluate the rhetoric and the actions that have been coming out of the United States, its European allies, its Asian allies, in regard to China, the strangulation of China that they're trying to do economically and geopolitically. And China, I think, has realized that the best way to protect China is to align China militarily, secure from a security standpoint, with the other nation that is lined up against the same enemy set that China's facing, and that's Russia. And this is a huge deal because it's not that China's military is going to be coming over the borders. I mean, I think you'll see some Chinese assistance from a material standpoint. You'll see some of this. You'll see closer cooperation between Russia and China. It won't be a one-way street. Russia has some technology it can offer China that will be devastating to America if China ever incorporates it. But more importantly, it's about the fact that Russia is no longer alone, that China now has said, we support what you're doing. We're on your side. We're on Team Putin when it comes to Ukraine, when it comes to the world, the global position. This is bad news for those in the United States who are trying to resurrect Cold War fantasies of being able to wage and win two wars simultaneously. You know, back when I was in the Marine Corps, we actually had a posture of fighting two and a half wars. The way the United States was configured militarily, we could fight a war in Europe using NATO and defeat the Soviet Union. At the same time, we could fight our major war in the Pacific, probably North Korea, and defeat the North Korean Chinese threat, and still have sufficient force to engage in a smaller war, say in the Middle East, where we would fight a holding action until we won one of the two major wars and diverted the resources in to win the half war. And we had the forces to do that. We trained to do it. We were ready to do it. And thank God we never had to do it, but I think we could have done it. Today, we went from two and a half to two wars. Today, we're down to literally one war, and we can't even do one war. Let's be honest. If we went to war right now in Europe against Russia, we don't have sufficient military force to prevail. We can fight a war. We can't win a war. If we went to war against China, we could fight a war, but we can't win it. And that's even if we bring the totality of our conventional strength into play. And now we're talking about doing it against both Russia and China. The costs that are going to be associated with this are phenomenal. First of all, it's going to require a massive expansion of our conventional military power. The United States Army just had a shortfall in recruiting. There, they are literally tens of thousands of personnel short of what their authorized manning strength is, which means instead of expanding the U.S. Army, they have to shrink it. They don't have enough men or women to fill the ranks. And so certain units, certain capabilities are being taken down to zero because you don't have manpower to do this. And now Congress is talking about beefing up. With what? Are you going to go to a draft? Have you run that by the American people? Is it really smart for the United States to talk about fighting a two war? Do we know what that means? It means that America has to leave our continental fortress, go across the oceans to fight a war over there in their backyard. In their backyard. That means we're taking Russia on, you know, in a confrontation in Europe where Russia's logistics are literally right there next to them. They're supplying themselves from interior lines of communication. We will have to extend ourselves. We don't have sufficient logistical buildup in Europe anymore. It would cost billions to do that. That means we have to sustain from the United States with lengthy supply lines. It's literally suicidal. So this is insane. Biden's talking about, they're talking about potential conflict with Iran. We can't fight Iran. We don't have the forces to do that. You know, we fought the Gulf War in 1991 by having friendly ports and airfields that we could bring our ships into and offload in an uncontested fashion and land and offload troops. How are we going to do that in a war with Iran? They're going to blow up every port, blow up every airfield. It means now we have to do a forcible entry into an Iranian port, Chabahar, Bandar Abbas. We don't have the force structure to do that. Iran has missiles that'll sink our ships before we get there. They're parking two aircraft carrier battle groups off the coast of Lebanon with a 2,000-man amphibious ready group to fight Hezbollah. Hezbollah is 100,000 men, highly trained, dug in to the hills of southern Lebanon who've been preparing for this fight. We have gone insane. Let me just make it very clear. America can't fight and win a war anywhere in the world right now against any power that has any military capability. We're that weak. We are literally that weak.
We can't even stop people coming across our own southern border to the tune of 10 to 15,000 people per day. So we can really extend ourselves going all the way to China or Iran and turning, of course, former allies, I suppose, in Saudi Arabia against us as well. The Biden administration getting the cold shoulder from Saudi Arabia. But the Biden administration seems keen on raising another $100 billion for the war in Ukraine and to funnel money into Israel. Over the past 24 hours, Zelensky on the Ukrainian side has said, see, all of these long-range weapons you've sent us have worked. We now took down 8 Russian helicopters, so keep sending us money. And the Biden administration seems keen on doing that. Where is this money going to go? What is it going to be used for in Ukraine? Hasn't this been finished now? Aren't we done here?
Well, Ukraine's over, first of all. Let's put the attack on the airfield in perspective. Ukraine fired, I believe, a total of 7 attackums and cluster bomb munition variant of the HIMARS. 5 of them were shot down by the Russians. This is the Russians' first look at this weapon system, meaning that their air defense wasn't configured to defeat this weapon system, but they shot down 5. The 2 that hit didn't get direct hits. They destroyed 2 helicopters. They damaged 7. Those 7 will be brought back into working order. So basically, Ukraine launched a surprise attack using their miracle weapon, and they destroyed 2 helicopters. Russia has the radar tracked, has all the technical data they need on this, the guidance system. Ukraine will never get a chance like it had. This was supposed to be a massive blow, a surprise attack that would annihilate a Russian airfield. It was a surprise attack. Russia shot down the vast majority of the missiles. The 2 that hit did not deliver a knockout blow, and they will never get the surprise opportunity again. That's it for attackums. So we shouldn't be talking about attackums anymore. They used it. It didn't do what it was supposed to do. It's done. What else do we have up our sleeves to give? This is it. I mean, what, F-16s now? But remember, those are old aircraft. Nobody's talking about F-16s anymore. The ATACMS was the miracle weapon. It was the one everybody said we had to give to Ukraine to level the battlefield. We gave it to them. They used it. It isn't much. I told everybody that. It's not that good of a weapon system. And used against the Russians, it won't be any good. Now the Russians have built up a threat model. They're going to reconfigure their air defense, tinker it, and it's going to get shot down every time it's fired. Ukraine's got nothing left. Their strategic reserves are empty. They're fighting a series of battles on the front line right now where the operational tempo is dictated by Russia. Ukraine, whatever's left of the Ukrainian army is dying. They have nothing to replace it. Russia's taken over the initiative across the line of contact. It's all over, but the screaming and the shouting of dead Ukrainians. And I don't mean to be too callous on it, but this is what it's about. It's about dead Ukrainians. The longer this goes on, the more Ukrainians are going to die and the more territory Ukraine's going to lose. Right now, Russia has initiated offensive operations in the Kupiansk area in the northern part of the line of contact. What's important about that? And again, this is something that most Westerners don't get. They don't understand. Russia kept that sector of the battlefield quiet. Why? Because it's on Ukrainian soil. Russia has always said, we're going to give this back to you when this war is done. We don't want to occupy Ukraine, but we have to maintain this so that we protect our defensive positions in Lugansk, south of that. But they didn't go on the offensive there for the longest time. They have now. What does that mean? See, some people don't understand that when the Russians make a decision to go on the offensive on Ukrainian soil, it means they're now going to own that soil. They're never giving it back. Kharkov is goodbye. Russia will take Kharkov now. And once Russia gobbles up Kharkov, they're going to gobble up everything else. Ukraine just made a fatal mistake and they don't even know it. I mean, Zelensky, if you're watching, please listen to me. You just lost Kharkov. You just lost Kharkov. If you continue, you will lose Dnepropetrovsk. If you continue, you will lose Mykolaiv. You will lose Odessa. It's over. Save your country. Stop the fighting. But they don't get it. And nobody in the West gets it either. When I say this to Western analysts, they go, Scott, that's just Russian propaganda. Oh, no, it's real. It's what the Russians do. They're very honest and sincere. Remember, they're the ones that gave Kyiv back to the Ukrainians. Ukraine didn't recapture it. The Russians had fought the Ukrainians to a standstill. They had the operational initiative, but Russia wanted to end the war back in March, April of last year. Russia voluntarily turned over this territory, and Russia was going to turn over all the territory of Ukraine. But the West wouldn't allow Zelensky to pursue peace. Now Zelensky's lost everything, and he's going to lose more.
And they don't seem to understand that. So now Ukraine has basically turned into what we all thought it would become, which is basically an aircraft carrier for NATO. I suppose that's the future of what the rest of Ukraine will look like. Is that what we're going to see in Israel now, that this will be a staging ground for this larger regional Middle East war right now? I mean, if when Biden leaves, of course, the rumblings are nothing's going to happen. No major offensive is going to happen till President Biden leaves Israel, and then all hell is going to break loose. How do you see this unfolding over the next 24, 48 hours?
Look, the Israelis right now are scared to death. Scared to death. They mobilized 360,000 reservists. Let's just put this in perspective. The vast majority of these people did their 2.5 years military service. The Israeli army is not very good. They have some units that are very capable, some of their special forces units, some of their specialized units. They have some technical units that are very good. But the mainstay, the infantry units, the armor units, they're not very good. And they have become even less good by being pulled back from conventional combat duties to policing duties in the West Bank. So most of these reservists spent their time walking the streets in the West Bank, learning how to break the arms of 10-year-old children, how to rough up 15-year-old girls, and how to belly shoot 60-year-old men. That's what they did. Brutal occupation. It was horribly demoralizing for many of these people. They didn't like doing this. And when they left the military, they didn't have a high regard for the military. So now they're back. But this time, they're being called upon to do something that nobody in Israel wants to do. Go into Gaza. Why? Because in 2014, they went into Gaza and Hamas handed it to them. In 2006, they went up against Hezbollah and Hezbollah handed it to them. The Israeli army just isn't that good and they're scared to death because Hamas is waiting for them. This is one giant ambush and the Israeli intelligence is blind. They don't know where they are. They're going to have to go in there and probe. And as they probe, they're going to be blown up, ambushed, slaughtered. And they know this. The other thing that scares them is once they go into Gaza, they're going to be committed to that battle with the bulk of their reserves. And if at that time Hezbollah decides to open up a northern front, Israel's got nothing left. And even if they had something left, they can't beat Hezbollah. They can't beat Hezbollah. They know it. They've exercised it. Last year, Chariots of Fire. This year, Firm Hand. Those are the names of two major exercises where Israel tested its ability to fight a conflict against the Palestinians and Hamas in the West Bank and Hezbollah up north, and they can't do it. They don't have the resources to do it. Now you throw in Iran, and they're definitely screwed. So America is stepping in saying, hey, we're going to flex our muscle in an effort to deter Hezbollah and Iran from striking. It's not working. Two aircraft carrier battle groups and an amphibious ready group with 2,000 Marines does not a war win. And we don't have anything behind that. We got nothing. And so if they come, so I think what's going to happen is that Biden is going to try and talk some common sense into Netanyahu and let him know the hard reality that, yeah, we flexed our muscles here, but if Hezbollah comes across the border, we'll bomb them, but we can't stop them. It's up to you. And if you can't stop them, you're screwed. And so you might want to think about coming up with a different solution than the one you're picking right now, a full-faced invasion. There's a lot of things go behind to say the Israelis aren't as good as everybody thinks they are. They're very scared. Netanyahu's very weak. Remember how weak he was moving into this before Hamas invasion? He was getting ready to collapse because of what he was doing with the judiciary and the reform, you know, the rewriting of basic law. Hundreds of thousands of Israelis were in the streets. It's gotten worse for him because everybody's blaming. He was Mr. Security. I will protect you. I am the man. And look what happened. Nobody trusts him. There's a lot of Israeli talk going on, a lot of hot air coming out of the mouthpieces of Netanyahu's minions. None of it's backed up by reality. And the fact is Israel's extraordinarily weak, extraordinarily exposed, extraordinarily scared, and America doesn't have a solution for them.
And I guess is the template to look at what would happen to Israel, just look at Ukraine?
It would be worse than that because what, you know, Ukrainians right now don't have a place to run to. Millions of Israelis have dual citizenship and they'll just leave Israel. I mean, that's the death of Israel. Every Israeli I've talked to said, we can't, this happened in 1991 when the Iraqi Scuds came in. One of the big things they were saying is it's not so much the damage, physical damage that the Iraqi Scuds are doing. It's the emotional and psychological damage it's doing to Israelis. If we can't get the European Jews and the American Jews to want to come here and stay here, it's over for the Israeli experiment. And if Hezbollah can come in and threaten northern Israel, if Hamas can continue to threaten, it's over. People will flee. Millions of people will leave and they will never come back. And that's it for Israel. So I think right now Israel's in a very difficult situation where the Israeli experiment has been shown to be a failure. And now the question is, you know, how do you get out of this? They're going to have to come up with a solution for Palestine, one that's acceptable to the Palestinians. And Israel no longer has the superior position where they get to dictate outcomes. They're actually going to have to negotiate. And this is where the United States could be of great benefit. But we can't because we continually shoot ourselves in the foot by opening our mouths and threatening war with people when we can't beat them.
Well said. Well, President Biden, we'll see how long he stays there. A bunch of meetings, of course, in the Middle East have been canceled in Jordan and Saudi Arabia. So maybe his trip will be a little bit shorter. We'll be watching this very closely over the next 48 hours. Scott Ritter, as always, it's a pleasure having you here on the show. Your analysis is second to none. We really, really appreciate it. And thanks for your great thoughts here. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott. And of course, a lot of moving pieces at this hour. It's amazing to watch Antony Blinken basically trying to meet with MBS in Saudi Arabia and gets totally stepped on. Mm-hmm. Meeting canceled. The meeting in Jordan canceled. Obviously, the Middle East on high alert. And I should point out, there's a reason we didn't run with this hospital story last night. Many of you were asking us to cover it last night on the show, and we simply wouldn't. because we didn't have all the answers. And I don't think that anyone still has all of the answers on this story. But it just goes to show you, under the fog of propaganda and the way that the Western media runs with these stories, they're having to walk back, change headlines, dig in, make stuff up, fire, you know, reporters who've been on the air. We'll show you the BBC angle on this. We'll show you the New York Times piece on this. But this afternoon, even, we have Russian President Putin in China demanding through his, basically his spokesperson, through his mouthpiece, calling on Israel to show all of us the proof that you say you have that shows that you didn't carry out an attack on a hospital in Gaza. And you say you have the proof. President Biden was there during the press conference saying he's seen the satellite images, or we have the satellite images that show the proof is here. Great. So Vladimir Putin saying, well, then show it to us. You have this proof. Please show us the unedited satellite imagery that shows that there was no bombing by Israel on a hospital.
We're going to get to this later when we talk to Carl Zhaw, but, you know, the relationship between Israel and Russia has been fairly good. We've spoken right about this with Mike Jones. So this is not an accusation on part of Putin. He's just trying to say, let's wait to have a response. Let's see it.
Right. So Putin calls on Israel bombing. Here's the Cradle headline. Putin calls on Israel bombing of Gaza hospital, humanitarian catastrophe. Quote, we are seeing a desire from Israel to absolve responsibility, Moscow says. If there are serious intentions to prove it was not involved and is innocent, then it needs not only to comment in the media and on social networks, but to provide facts, says Moscow. And unedited satellite footage, as well as evidence regarding the flight locations to back up Tel Aviv's claims that an errant Palestinian rocket managed to demolish the multi-story hospital. Of course, then as daylight arrives, there's, of course, showing that, well, the hospital's still there. Well, that's odd. I thought the hospital was destroyed. So, wait a minute, the hospital's still there, but the parking lot was hit? But 500 people were dead, and then 300 more people are dead? Like, what's the real story here? But, you know, forget the facts. That doesn't matter to the mainstream media. As soon as this story breaks and there's messages about it, no journalist actually, like, on the ground right where this happened or even in the area, because they've been kept back from this area. So where is this information even coming from? Cell phone video? Are we going to trust the Israeli intelligence, who says they picked up a cell conversation, yet they couldn't stop the October 7th attacks on their country, but they're now tapping phones really, really effectively and picking up conversations, but they didn't find out. So all of this seemed very mysterious. All of this sounds crazy. And the New York Times, though, didn't stop. They ran right with this story. Here is the New York Times headline when they ran with this. Look at this. Israeli strike kills hundreds in hospital, Palestinians say. So this was one of the first New York Times headlines. But look at the image there. That's not the hospital. So, okay, well, how deceiving is that if you're the New York Times, right? Well, if I'm reading this headline and it says hospital, my eyes are going to go right to an image on the paper that, well, that's clearly got to be the hospital they're talking about, right? No. That's not it. And then they revised it again. They revised their headlines. Here's the next round of headlines here. Put these up here. Yeah. Israeli strike kills hundreds in hospital, Palestinians say. This was the image then that they switched and used. Okay. So that was the next version of their headline. Then they rolled another headline out just a short time later. Here's their new headline. At least 500 dead in strike on Gaza hospital, Palestinians say. Okay, now see how it says strike? Okay, now it's a strike on the hospital. All right, now here's they revised it a third time. At least 500 dead in blast at Gaza hospital. It's now a blast. So it went from a strike to a blast, and it was first Israel. Now it's a strike, then a blast.
We've seen this before in recent history when hospitals in the Donbass are struck. And the Western press goes right ahead with whatever Zelensky said it was. So they should have learned their lesson by now that you wait for proof rather than just reporting. But okay, keep going.
Yeah. Someone says, yeah, that was redacted. Exactly. It was pulled back. Well, redacted.
They've been doing this. Like, I remember a sociology professor when I was in college pointing out that, like, during the American Indian War, the newspaper headlines would be the U.S. cavalry would conduct surprise attacks, but the Native Americans would ambush.
Right.
And so it's just like, it's just like changing that one word, you know, just for the, but the, the blast is just so passive. It's just a blast happened.
Yeah.
It's like,
I would love to see the proof. Like,
do you know, during the times of the founding fathers that journalists carried guns because they would regularly be challenged to duels for printing falsehoods?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a dangerous profession, of course. Yeah, it was a very dangerous
now
profession.
Now there's no consequence for now telling lies.
No, now they just kill journalists. Now they just target journalists specifically. And the Western media, if you speak out, you know, if you're a journalist on the ground reporting things on the ground, you'll be criticized for it and slammed for it and fired for it, silenced for it. I mean, that's what happens. A number of like BBC reporters are throwing in the towel over the past few hours. But here is the BBC. They jumped right on this. This was the initial reporting from the BBC. So the BBC was initially saying, yeah, this is Israel. Clearly it was, you know, you hear the size of this thing. Clearly came from an Israeli aircraft is what the BBC reported initially.
Israeli military has been contacted for comment, and they have said that they are investigating. But, you know, it is hard to see what else this could be, really, given the size of the explosion, other than an Israeli airstrike or several airstrikes. Because, you know, when we've seen rockets being fired out of Gaza, we never see explosions of that scale. We might see half a dozen, maybe a few more people being killed in such rocket attacks. But we've never seen anything on the scale of the sort of explosion on the video I was watching earlier, which, as you say, is still to be verified.
So what's the truth here? Well, we do know, I mean, that multiple hospitals have been hit repeatedly. So this in the healthcare facilities, but this specific story, I mean, the fog of all of this, but President Biden barely lands in his aircraft and says it was the other team. He says, we have evidence it was the other team. He called it the other team. It's like a soccer match here. And then Putin is demanding satellite images. And Biden says, we have satellite proof. We have satellite images. Okay, please show the world. Show us the unedited images of all of this. Settle all of this. So there's not all of this back and forth and all of these people rushing to one side and drawing a corral around this. But
condemning the side they want to condemn.
Yeah.
Just with sort of validation proof. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, I for one am just absolutely like sick of the trust us argument. Like, no, we have proof. Trust us.
Right.
You know, like we need to start seeing it.
Right.
Well, one reporter today asked the Israeli Defense Forces spokesperson today, well, like, why should we trust you? You guys repeatedly lie to us. So why should we trust you? And he's like, well, credibility is important and we own up when we say things that are inaccurate. Okay. Is that true? Really? You guys own up? Okay. And is Hamas being truthful? And, you know, the mainstream media spin on all of it is hilarious to watch and really sad because people are dying as a result of the propaganda.
And we have to remember, like, all of their communication services have been cut off. So that gives them the upper hand with the narrative and the propaganda, because the other side really doesn't have a way to communicate unless a journalist happens to get over there and happens to get footage or something. Like, it's very rare because they have no cell service. They have no internet, nothing.
Well, Hamas was able to release an 18-minute video over the weekend explaining their side. So they are able to get messages out that they want. So clearly this is a war of messages. It is exactly what Jean Baudrillard warned us about, that wars would be fought through media propaganda. So it behooves us to wait and see rather than condemn anybody that is already our conviction bias at this point.
Right. So someone says, trust me, I'm an expert. Exactly.
Right.
Karen says a redacted doesn't condemn anyone. They just report the news. I mean, look, we are vehemently anti-war on this show. So we've, you know, openly calling for a ceasefire, for innocent people to not be killed, hostages that are grabbed by Hamas that are going to be killed and probably going to be killed in Israeli airstrikes, innocent Israelis, innocent Palestinians. innocent Ukrainians, innocent Russians, like all of it. We want a ceasefire. We are vehemently anti-war on this show.
And we spend a lot of our time studying the mistakes of wars past. And so we refuse to, you know, yell out things like weapons of mass destruction or babies in incubators when those stories didn't pan out and ended up being things that led us into war, brought the average person, the average peace-loving person, to support wars they may not otherwise. So our goal here is to take a beat for anything that may give extensive war powers to somebody else.
And I also think it's important. I love to call out the hypocrisy of stuff because I can't stand hypocrisy on the end. So when I see today, like at the U.S. Capitol, Palestinians went into the Capitol building and basically took over the Capitol from the images that I could see earlier today. And I have all the, you know, we don't know exactly how it unfolded, but, you know, holding up banners, calling, I think saying Free Palestine. This was in the Capitol Rotunda. Do we all remember what happened to January 6th individuals who went into the Capitol Rotunda who were basically thrown in gulags and locked up and who were, you know, basically held without any kind of trial for a very long time, had their lives ruined because they were at the Capitol? Mm. So I'm just curious what's going to happen. You know, if Israelis did the same thing, I would ask the very same question. If Israelis stormed the Capitol Rotunda, I would love to see the media covering this and how they would handle this. And would this be the same level of outrage as January 6th? I'm just asking, you know, just the hypocritical media coverage of this is just unbelievable right now. So it's worth questioning. It's worth asking. We have more news to get to here on your Wednesday. We're going to look at China's Belt and Road Initiative because, guys, while all of this is happening, China and Russia are solidifying a very strategic partnership. We just heard Scott Ritter talking about major pieces of this, of course, security, infrastructure, money, weapons, minerals, resources, and of course, an expansion of trade. I mean, what this means is monumental, and the Western press, of course, is going to totally ignore this story, but we are going to cover it deeply here. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends, a sponsor of the show, because if you have ever had trouble sleeping at night, you know, sometimes you stay up at night, your mind keeps going, maybe you were on your screen too late. Well, you might want to consider a magnesium supplement because this is a great natural way to get to sleep instead of maybe something that's over the counter that's going to make you feel hungover the next day, groggy. You know, Clayton and I once got an over-the-counter sleeping medication at Costco, and we were sleepy the whole weekend. So magnesium is a much better way. But once we started using Magnesium Breakthrough, it really helped to optimize sleep. So if you have any trouble falling asleep, even if it's late and you're like, oh, I shouldn't take something, you can take this and still wake up feeling as if you were totally slept. Magnesium Breakthrough helps solve our sleep problems from winding down at the end of a stressful day to tossing and turning and then again not waking up groggy. It's really been a game changer. That's because these supplements have all seven forms of magnesium, not just a few. Over 75% of the population is magnesium deficient. And what people don't know is even if they do take a magnesium supplement, they still can be deficient because they're not getting all seven forms. So that's why Magnesium Breakthrough is the ultimate way to give your body all seven forms in one supplement. Not only does it help you sleep better, it also helps calm your mind, allows you to feel grounded and relaxed during the day and also before bed. So don't miss out on the most relaxing sleep ever with Magnesium Breakthrough. You can use our code REDACTED and save 10% by going to magbreakthrough.com/redacted. See it there on your screen. That's magbreakthrough.com/redacted. Get 10% off and use the code redacted. So one more time, for better sleep, check out our show sponsor. We really appreciate them sponsoring independent journalism. That's magbreakthrough.com/redacted. Well, the West is sour grapes over the Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, which is happening this week in China. Western media will say this is proof that Russia and China want to take over the world. But is that actually true? Remember, this is an economic forum, not a military conference. We asked Carl Zha to join us. He is coming to us from China, where he's been covering this. He's an expert on Asian politics and host of the Silk and Steel podcast. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from China today.
Thank you for inviting me, Natalie. I rushed down the Great Wall to join your interview, so I'm very honored to be here.
That's amazing that there is such a collaboration because, like you said, you're reporting for RT. And I had asked, oh, is that hard to do, to report from RT from the Great Wall of China? Did you need special permits? And what you had told us before we started recording is that there is an interesting collaboration between Russia and China, and why that seemed like it was not so difficult. Maybe I couldn't just do it, but for these powers, tell me a little bit more about the collaboration between Russia and China.
Well, President Xi Jinping visited Russia earlier this year, and he has famously said to President Putin that right now we're witnessing changes that haven't been seen for last 100 years, and you and I are driving those changes together. I think that point is driven home by the images that's coming out of the Belt and Road Forum right now. When you see the door opens up and President Xi Jinping and Putin are leading the rest of the world leaders marching into the Great Hall of the People. And it's quite a powerful message. And it really shows this is a arrival of a new world order and the West is not part of it.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about this Western narrative that these developing countries don't understand the debt that they're taking on from China. What is it that the West thinks they don't understand? It's kind of laughable because most of those countries are more beholden to Western debt organizations like the International Monetary Fund. But what is it that maybe they do understand, and why would China do this?
Well, a lot of the Western reportage on China is 100% projection. They're projecting onto China what IMF and World Bank actually does, which is debt-trapping nations in the global south to Western finance, and then in the end, extracting resources from countries like Africa to European capital like Paris, London, or to Washington. And again, what they don't understand, what China do is fundamentally different, because what China has done in the past few decades is they have built up China from a very poor agrarian country into an industrial powerhouse. In doing so, they built world-class infrastructure. You foster a host of Chinese companies who is catering to building infrastructure, fostering this growth. But now China is getting increasingly built out. China already have amazing bridges, amazing high-speed rail network. What Belt and Road Initiative is designed to do is export this excessive Chinese industrial capacity to the rest of the world, where development is desperately needed, where there's a desperate need for more roads, for ports, for high-speed rail. Where I stay normally in Indonesia, the fourth most populous country in the world, China has built Southeast Asia's first high-speed rail from between Jakarta and Bandung, traveling at 350 kilometers an hour. Natalie, Indonesia now has high-speed rail before United States. I don't know when U.S. will ever get its own high-speed
rail. Oh, my goodness. Don't even talk. I'm from California, and the whole, Los Angeles to San Francisco high-speed rail, what a mess. I don't think that will ever happen. So we can sort of look on and envy.
Yeah, this is why I think United States should just get over its sour grapes and join the Belt and Road Initiative. And maybe China will help U.S. finally build a high-speed rail in United States. Let's not forget, the first cross-continental railway in China was also built with Chinese labor. They can do it again.
So I want to ask you about two politicians specifically that showed up. You mentioned Russian President Vladimir Putin, but also I want to ask you about Viktor Orban, who is a leader of a NATO country and an EU country. And his attendance at the Belt and Road conference is being looked down on as if he went to the wrong side of the playground. So can you tell me about the reception of Vladimir Putin and also the attendance of Viktor Orban, from the leader of Hungary?
So when President Vladimir Putin walked into the Great Hall of People and delivering his speech, several delegates from EU countries actually walked out. And this is a very childish, immature action, because Europe desperately needs Russia. Europe needs Russian energy. Europe is suffering right now after the deadly terrorist attack on German critical infrastructure project, that is Nord Stream 2.2. And the effect of that is the German industrialists are now plucking their plants from Germany and shipping them to United States. So essentially, U.S. policy is cannibalizing its European, so-called European partners, but really vassal states, to shoring up its own faltering economy. So this is not good for Europe. And European leaders like von der Leyen or Joseph Borrell, they have acted nothing more than spokesperson for Washington rather than a defender of European interests. What Viktor Orban has done is he's stood standing up for Hungary's national interests, because he realized that Hungary could not function by denying Russia its own place, a link as an energy partner of Europe.
Now, you mentioned that this is not a military conference, but it almost is impossible to leave military conversation out of this, because we're looking to leaders of the world to have a response to Israel. Also, just today, there was a congressional report that said that Russia and China are major existential threats, and the United States needs to prepare for nuclear threats, ramp up its own nuclear arsenal. You know, is this one of the things that will prevent international collaboration, do you think?
Now, when President Xi Jinping gave his opening address at BRI, he specifically said the BRI is not about dividing world into blocks. That's not what's it for. What BRI is inviting countries from all over the world, including Western countries, to sit down and talk over their differences, especially in this time of increasing geopolitical instability, as you mentioned, the conflict between Israel and Palestine. And not only to settle their differences, but to cooperate together for future development. So what China and Russia are offering is a vision for the future, a long-term future. Whereas Washington and its European lackeys are sticking to the old forever war, they offer nothing but military bases, more weapons for Israel, and this continued impoverishment of their own citizens to lining up the pockets of military-industrial complex.
Thank you so much for that analysis. It's always great. You can follow Carl Zaw on Twitter, or X, as it were. And where can we find your coverage of this more extensively, maybe for RT?
You can find it on RT.com, or you can find it on Rumble or Odyssey.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'll be watching out for that, because I especially want to see those shots from the Great Wall of China. Thank you again for taking the time to be on Redacted.
Thank you, Natalie. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Carl. All right, we've got more news to get to here on your Wednesday. We're going to look at why ATMs are disappearing. You want cash? Good luck. Banks closing. Australia is pissed. Australians today waking up pissed about the number of ATMs that have closed, thousands across the United States. Let us know in the chat right now, actually, if you had an ATM that you used on a regular basis that you would go to, and now you can't anymore because it's either been closed or moved, or your local bank branch also has been closed or moved. Let me know about that. We're going to cover that story coming up. But first, you know, today the Wall Street Journal had this piece out today called "Who Counts as a Disaster Prepper These Days?" And they say lots of us. And I think it's an interesting story, because many of us are preparing for this. You know, you're not, I don't even like the pejorative, I guess they're using it as a pejorative, sort of like the idea of being a prepper, right? But it's, I mean, what does that really mean? It means you're just preparing for what's coming, right?
I mean, as a Californian, everyone's a prepper for an earthquake. You have to be, or else you're an idiot.
Yeah. So our friends over at Four Patriots will actually help you become a prepper and protect you from what's coming. And, you know, we could be facing a food shortage coming. Even in the United States, farmers are being, you know, shut down. This is what the World Economic Forum wants, is getting rid of farmers. And we saw this. John Boyd Jr., a fourth generation farmer, told Fox News that we're going to see empty food shelves in the coming months. That's why getting survival food is more important than ever. And you can rotate through this, like buy a package from Four Patriots and then rotate through it, eat some of it, and then save some of it, rotate through it, order some more. And you don't, you know, that way you always have it on hand. It'll last for 25 years. It's a super survival food. It's not ordinary food, guys. It's super survival food that'll last 25 years, hand-packed in a family-owned facility in the United States, giving jobs to over 200 Americans. They have different delicious breakfasts, lunches, dinners. You can make these meals in less than 20 minutes. Just add boiling water, simmer, and serve. And right now, for the next few days, listeners of Redacted News will get 10% off their first order by going to 4patriots.com and using the code REDACTED. It's 4patriots.com, and just use that coupon code REDACTED to support what we do here and to support independent journalism. So our thanks to 4patriots. We've been talking about resupplying because we have some of our foods, canning and other supplies. Mm-hmm. And so we said we're going to be ordering a new batch of food to go through and protect our family.
You know, you could do is take it camping, too, when it gets near expiration date. That way you sort of practice using it, too. That'd be a good idea.
Boiling water. That's what my dad and I used to do when we go camping and use it.
Once I went to Costco and got that really spicy chili, remember, to go camping. Yeah, yeah. And the kids were like...
The little kids.
I didn't know because I don't usually buy canned food.
That's pretty brave when you're using like a vault toilet or just, you know, going natural
the stag chili,
a spicy chili.
Yeah.
Like
that. I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah.
So. I love this chat on our Rumble chat from Lazib says Redacted has gone off the rails. And I just want to say thank you. We were never on the rails. And if you want a show that's on the rails, please go watch CNN or go watch Fox. But we will never be on the rails. We will always question everything, and we will feature independent journalists on our show. So if you want on the rails, you've come to the wrong place. You can go over to CNN and enjoy that. Or MSNBC actually is more on the rails. All right, we've got more news to get to. Let's talk about this. Something odd started happening during the COVID lockdown that most people didn't even notice. They actually kind of ignored it. Your ATM machines, I'm going to say ATM machines. I know it's redundant. ATM, M stands for machine. I'm going to say it because I don't know. I think it just works. It makes more sense in the context of this news story.
You can just say ATMs. ATMs.
I will say, all right, I'll say ATM. Yeah, if I say ATM machines, don't let me know in the chat.
Okay, I was gonna say because I'll slightly die inside every time you say ATM machine, but you do you.
No, but it's funny. It's like I don't usually ever say that because I always correct people with it. But now, for in the sake of this, just so I don't know why I want to make sure you understand, I'm talking about a machine here.
Did you ever see the movie Mickey Blue Eyes? The restaurant's called the La Trattoria.
Yeah,
that's like what you're doing.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Anyway, have you noticed that ATMs are disappearing and bank branches are disappearing? Well, here's what happened: the place where you would get cash was suddenly closed for health reasons during COVID, right? These ATMs were closed down, not just in the United States, but all across the Western aligned world, most notably Australia. Thousands upon thousands of ATMs were turned off and they stopped working. They were just shut down intentionally. Of course, they were really worried about the COVID on the screen, right? They were really worried about when you touch the screens and all of that. It was the pandemic, so no one needed them. And of course, COVID was nefarious, and it could live on the keypads of ATMs, right? You get all that COVID all over those keypads, you're going to get sick. And we don't have enough Clorox wipes in the world to keep up with that, to kill all of the COVID. So we had to shut them all down, right? This was how they spun it to us.
Yet we were still allowed to get gas.
Right. No, but you had to use a little plastic hand thing, like if you never getting gas, right? Yeah. So you don't need cash anyway, right? They don't want you to have cash because you're at home ordering food from Uber Eats anyway. So you don't need these ATMs right now. We're going to shut them down. It'll cause COVID. You're at home ordering on Uber Eats or getting your Amazon delivery packages. So cash is trash. plus cash transmit COVID as well.
Well, health experts say the coronavirus can live on surfaces like cash for up to 10 days. That has many people worried about shopping and other everyday tasks.
Yeah, that's right. Cash carries COVID. Still my favorite soundbite of all time, by the way. I love that. So don't lick your dollar bills or your coins because COVID, you know, because cash has COVID.
Well, I mean, so hang on. I don't think the virus can live outside of the like a body for 10 days.
I don't think so either.
Where did they come up with that number?
No. I don't know. But hey, you know, this is the local news report. This is your Action News news report and whatever this hell,
well,
the hell this was,
yeah,
Chicago.
Yeah, it's that money that you put like right down here, maybe. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I guess.
Or up
the
your bum.
That are chewing on their bills. Right.
Is that where you store?
It's the money you put in your bra.
I'm
going to
go.
You know.
I'm going to go looking for some cash, some petty cash a little bit later, if you know what I mean. So in the UK alone, over 8,000 ATMs were shut down. 8,000. 13% of all cash machines in the United Kingdom switched off, not replaced. 8,000 of them gone. And the Wall Street Journal reporting in the US, the number was actually far greater. 19,000 that we know of were shut down during COVID. Here's how CBS explains the closure.
The U.S. peaked with 470,000 ATMs across the country in 2019. That number dropped to more than 451,000 by the end of 2022. Now, the trend started during the pandemic when many people stopped using cash.
So what's the big deal, right? Once the COVID hysteria was passed, I'm sure all of those machines were turned back on, right? They pulled off the police tape that they wrapped around these things, remember that? And they fired them back on. Wrong. None of them were turned back on, in fact. In fact, of the 8,000 that were turned off in the UK, they were done so permanently. In the US, the 19,000 that were shut during the pandemic, permanently and growing. A study shows that all ATMs will cease to exist by the year 2037. I think that's actually pretty generous. I think it'll probably happen sooner. Let us know in the chat. Do you think 2037, that'll take that long? 14 years? I'm doing my math, right? 14 years or so? That these things will still be in existence? I don't think so. I think it'll be shorter time than that. I think it'll be sooner. And the same study also says that bank branches will be gone by the year 2041. Just like telephone booths. Remember those where Superman? I mean, if Superman were around today... There's no telephone booths. He'd have to use the spinny door things. You know, that's about all he's got left to use. No phone booths, no ATMs to change in anymore. How's Superman going to be super without it, you know?
Yeah, he'd have to go into a phone charging station.
Right. He'd have to go into one of those, a tiny home. That's the new trend. So he could go to a tiny home. Mm-hmm. The same thing is happening in Australia.
Nursing booth.
Nursing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the same thing is happening, or one of the gender-neutral bathrooms. That's where he could go now. So the same thing is happening in Australia, where all of these ATMs are being shut down and the bank branches are being shut down. And it's not just the ATMs, but the small regional banks are closing down permanently as well. In Australia, more than 400 Australian banks bank branches just closed, new figures show. These numbers are out today, October 18th. This morning, Australia reports that more than 400 banks have closed their doors permanently. Over 700 ATMs just shut down. So what's going on here? Well, it doesn't take a genius to see the writing on the wall. The move towards CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, away from cash, the World Economic Forum plan, is kicking into high gear. And some cities, by the way, thankfully are actually fighting back on this. Certain states are fighting back on this, but I want to highlight my home city of Philadelphia. Go Phillies. They're making it illegal to refuse cash in Philly. Philly has a lot of problems, but they got this one right. Maybe this is the one thing they got right, and good cheesesteaks and great.
Yes, but would you pretzels. Want to insure an ATM in downtown Philadelphia with the crime rate right now?
No. And you kind of, you're bringing up a great point, which we'll get to a little bit later. But the idea is like because a lot of the banks are getting rid of their branch related ATMs, like Bank of America shutting theirs down because they have to insure them. So then most of the ATMs you now see or are going to see are third party independent ATMs that will charge you $2 and $3 just to take money out of them. Remember those back in the 80s and 90s? And then suddenly those were gone?
Yeah, we'd be like, oh, I'm Wells Fargo. I can't go to that ATM. That's yeah. Bank of America.
And then, well, you know, bank fees, ATM fees were like disappeared because mm-hmm. it became like a thing. You don't have those anymore. Now that you're a Bank of America customer, Wells Fargo, like ATM fees, those are gone. But now they're back. Because Bank of America, Wells Fargo, they're all shutting down their own ATMs and now in favor of these third-party ones that need to be insured. Mm-hmm. So they have to insure the carriers. Who's going to go into downtown Philadelphia? You know, I'm from Philly. You're going to drive there with an armored car full of cash and go to these ATMs. And then who's the insurance is going to provide for those ATMs as well? Yeah, so that's the other big side of this thing. But my home city of Philadelphia is making it illegal to refuse cash, saying it discriminates against those who don't have credit cards or digital money. So Philadelphia is, of course, where America's first mint was born, right? So the U.S. Mint is there in Philadelphia, and it's where coins and currency are created. So I think they're a little biased in that. So that it's great what Philly's doing, saying you must allow us to use cash, but what if you can't get cash? Like, it's great to say that, but what if you can't get access to the cash? And so if you're unbanked or you don't want to use this digital currency and now cash is drying up because there's no ATMs and there's no bank branches, where exactly are you going to get cash if they take away your access to it? I'm curious about this. Seriously, if you take away the bank branches, you take away the ATMs, how exactly are you supposed to get cash? Can anybody tell me in the chat how you would get it? How would you would get it?
Unless you have your paycheck direct deposited into like a cash app or a bank where you just use a debit card the whole time, if you're somebody who's unbanked, you'd have nowhere to cash your check. So your check is pretty much just a no good piece of paper. Like, how in the world would that work?
You go to the same day, what is it, the loan or the payday cash checking places, and mm-hmm. then they take like what, 10%?
They charge egregious fees, yeah.
And then what if they don't have cash to give you?
I don't know.
Yeah, right? I'm saying if they stop taking cash and they only take cards and all that, then, you know.
What's going to happen here?
You'd be screwed.
So, of course, why this is happening is we're getting very, very close now to the full implementation of the CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, slowly removing cash from circulation is, of course, part of the plan by the World Economic Forum. Move the power from the Treasury over to the Fed, over to these unelected bankers, these central bankers. 2 weeks ago, the head of the digital management director for the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, let the cat out of the bag on why they are moving quickly towards a CBDC and a digital currency. His third point here is all about control. It's all about surveillance and programming how and when you would get access to this money. And basically, if we don't want you to have the money, it expires.
The second aspect that CBDC can help improve financial inclusion is because of its legal tender status. Because CBDC is an obligation of central bank. And the obligation of central bank is a legal tender in every country. So it is widely accepted. That creates potential value for everyone to use it. And finally, the third way we think CBDC can improve financial inclusion is through what we call programmability. That is, CBDC can allow government agencies and private sector players to program, to create smart contract, to allow targeted policy functions. For example, welfare payment. For example, consumption coupon, for example, food stamp. By programming CBDC, those money can be precisely targeted for what kind of people can own and what kind of use this money can be utilized, for example, for food. So this potential programmability can help government agencies to precisely target their support to those people who need support. So that way can also improve financial inclusion.
Yeah. So China loves this,
God,
right?
I'm 100%. I'm 100% sure that this doesn't go both ways, because I mean, that's the scary thing. Like, if you have this, if your money is suddenly like contractually obligated, let's say like when it's tax time, like, you know, you might have just like lost your job and you're struggling to keep food, and they're just like, nope, sorry, we're grabbing it. There's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, then how often are they wrong too with their calculations? There are people that get the calculations wrong all the time. You owe $10,000 and you actually don't, and then they take that, you know?
Yeah.
Right. That's why I would never use the federal government has now their own sort of H&R Block where you just put in your tax return and they say you owe this much. No.
No, thanks.
No, thank you. And I would never. That's why anytime there's any kind of refund on our taxes, I'll take the check. I'll take the physical check. I do not want to give them our bank account number that they can just reach in and deposit it, because I'm too afraid that they'll reach in and take if they want.
So China has done this. Of course, they've rolled this out and it has not really worked to their, you know, the way they wanted to, in fact, and, you know, it's still sort of in, I guess, in the pilot stages, but, you know, China is obviously a different animal altogether, totally different country structure than the United States. And so, you know, the United States, we value our freedoms, right? Our freedom to be able to transact and do whatever we want, unlike the way that China does things. This is the way we want to be able to transact with our business.
Well, Carol Roth in her book points out that even though China says they have millions of accounts, that the average deposit is like $3.
So in their central bank digital currency accounts.
In these accounts.
But they also, in China, they've also kept the structure of the banks, the individual banks. So it's different than the way the United States structure is going to roll out. So your local, like regional banks are going to dissolve. Their credit unions are going to be gone. So it's going to be structured differently than it is in China. So yeah, it's interesting.
And I got a list here because I was looking this up last week. JP Morgan Chase is going to close 21 branches by 2023. PNC has closed 47. Wells Fargo, 23. Bank of America, 13. So if these large banks are closing, then the small banks have no chance.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And they're gobbling up small banks as it is and consolidating them, and then getting rid of banks and, of course, getting rid of cash at the same time. Getting rid of cash and banks is precisely what they want to do, as Catherine Austin Fitz points out. Listen.
What effect is central bank digital currency going to have on our traditional banks?
It will wipe them out. In other words, you are going to wipe out all local community banks, all credit unions, all small institutions within some period of time. And it'll take you a while to wipe them out, but if you look at what it will do to their fundamental economics, and you're going to put them in a position where they have to work for you, they can't represent their customer.
So if we lose our banks, then we lose our ability to transact the way we want. And we are now at the mercy of these central banks for everything in our lives. Here's Catherine again.
I agree with you. This is the most important point. Unless we have a sovereign state government protecting sovereign individuals who are free to transact, including transact privately, you know, without invasive technology, we will have no sovereignty. And then you're talking about 100% central control by the bankers. And the expression that I use, which I think is very accurate, is we're talking about a technology that, in combined with other systems, can turn your home, your car, and your community into a digital concentration camp. We're talking about the end of human freedom and centrally controlled through the financial system.
So I don't give a rat's ass what China does. China's its own country. I don't care. I care about the United States. I care about what the United States does. I care about what European countries do. I care about what the Western world is doing right now, but specifically the United States running full force into central bank digital currencies, giving unbelievable power to the Federal Reserve to run our lives, taking away our ability to transact, closing down accounts. We've already seen this with the protests in Canada. Right, we've seen what happened with the trucker convoy, taking away people's GoFundMe accounts, shutting down PayPal, Cash App. There's all sorts of stories, of course, what happened after January 6th in the United States. So they are taking away our ability to do transactions. When you take away cash, you take away ATMs, you take away local bank branches, what do we have left then? I mean, I guess you use gold. You call up our friends at
Barter.
Lear. You call up our friends at Lear Capital, I guess, and you get gold, right? Gold and silver or something. I mean, and then you start using gold coins, or I saw someone in the chat say rebels rebels will come together and start being able to like hand cash among themselves. Yeah, but in, like in Europe, they're making it illegal. Like if you over a certain amount threshold, then it becomes an illegal gray transaction.
Right, but in Portugal, terrorist. They would never get rid of the multibanco because so many elderly people pay their bills that way that don't understand how to pay bills online.
Right, they just go to the ATM.
They go to the ATM and you pay your bill with a code. They wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah. I don't know. Let us know your thoughts on this in the chat below. And I think one thing you can do is call up your local member of Congress and say, we don't want a central bank digital currency. I absolutely do not want this in my home state. Call up your bank's representatives. Tell them you need you do not want them getting rid of your ATMs. You want to be able to actually use cash for transactions. And in fact, I think it's smart to take out as much cash as you can and keep it on hand. You know, on a regular basis, when you go to the ATM once a week or so, take out some cash and put it in your safe or in your, you know, in your storage.
Well, that's not financial advice. That's just what we're saying because we're observing the deletion of our ability to transact with hard cash. So
don't forget to buy a bunch of the little airport bottles of liquor because those will also be a good currency.
Yes, right.
That's what Catherine Austin Fitz says, like one of the biggest currencies when the Soviet Union collapsed, one of the people didn't give a crap about money. They cared about vodka. Mm. Like that was the transactional, like vodka actually. So, yeah. All right, we've got more news to get to here. We're going to look at this Australian trans vote. What is Australia trying to hide from you? This is an unbelievable story. You're not going to want to miss what Australia is doing. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends over at Indeed, because the thing about running your own business is that every single hire counts, and no hiring partner understands that like Indeed, because Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. So don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, Assessment, and Virtual Interviews. And if you hate waiting, don't worry about it because Indeed's U.S. data shows that over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job. You know, my father is a small business owner. He uses Indeed whenever we need to hire help here at Redacted, even though we're a small enterprise. You know, we always make sure we check Indeed because you just can't take a risk when you're a small business of adding somebody that's not a right fit for you. Candidates you invite to apply through Instant Match are 3 times more likely to apply to your job than those who just see it in search, according to U.S. data. So Indeed knows that when you're growing your business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job description. So check them out. Let them know that you appreciate that they sponsor independent media by going to Indeed.com/redacted to start hiring right now. Again, go to Indeed.com/redacted. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. All right. Well, in Australia, the government voted not to launch a medical inquiry into transgender medicine. I guess that's appropriate because today is National Pronouns Day or International Pronouns Day, I guess. So we can't actually look under the hood of transgender medicalization, not on National Pronouns Day. My pronouns, if you want to play along, are whatever your biological instincts tells you that they are. I'm not going to gaslight you and tell you to call me something that your instinct tells you it's not. The motion in Australia was voted down 21 to 16 votes. This was a motion put forward by the Victorian Liberals, led by MP Maura Deeming. Now, she actually is partyless right now. She was expelled from this party, and we're going to get to why in a minute. Here she is, waiting out votes in Parliament. Now, she is called a radical feminist for saying things like, I don't know, sex-based rights should exist. Many also find it offensive that she would wear things like this. What she's saying here is that she wants an apology. We're going to talk in a minute about what she is owed an apology for. But first, a little bit about the initiative that Australian politicians decided we don't need to see that. What they do not want is a medical inquiry into what is called gender-affirming healthcare. We've talked about that before. I don't like this term because it's a misleading term. It doesn't mean you affirm someone's biology. It means you affirm their ideology. So if they say they are a different gender, you affirm the medicalization of their body through sex change surgeries and cross-sex hormones. The initiative called on Parliament to recognize that, quote, medical affirmation of gender dysphoric children and adolescents is currently one of the most controversial areas of medicine. This is true. And that there, you know, was just that there's no consensus about how to do it. There's no, for instance, if I were to go in and say, I want some testosterone to look more masculine, basically that medicine is treated like a clinic counter. They just turn it up and turn it down based on how I am responding. There's no like, what's your weight? How much, you know, what's your medical history? That this is treated as a cosmetic type thing. There's no real data around how safe it is, how much each person should be on, whether it contradicts other medical conditions. It's just not used that way. Now, this law would have required Parliament to investigate whether or not this is appropriate for children and maybe set some guidelines, and politicians said no. Who would oppose this? Why? Why do you not want studies about what this does to children's bodies? Well, we have a template actually from Dr. Meredith McNamara. She is an assistant professor at the Yale School of Medicine in the US. She often speaks to Congress. She speaks on behalf of what's called gender affirming care. This is her last October, so a year ago now, admitting that gender affirming care would never pass clinical trials or any studies.
Moving on, the state claims that the absence of randomized controlled trials negates all evidence for the benefits of gender-affirming care. First, an RCT, or randomized controlled trial, for gender-affirming care would never pass an institutional review board safety or ethical standard.
Duh, right? No, one, you can't do that to children, like for experimentation. I mean, we won't study it, we'll just do it and experiment on children in the wild. And no, of course, it would never pass because we already know that cross-sex hormones and puberty blockers are associated with all manner of unwanted health outcomes. For instance, let's see, memory loss, bone density loss, hair loss, early onset osteoporosis, muscle loss, anxiety. I mean, we could be here all day if we really talk about what these things do to young people's bodies. She also testified to Congress this June and was unable to provide any research that gender-affirming care is actually a helpful thing to do. Here is her being questioned by Texas Representative Dan Crenshaw.
There is great uncertainty about the effects of puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries in young people. The Journal of Endocrine Society came up with the same conclusion, even the American Academy of Pediatrics. They all cite the lack of evidence. And so here's the thing. If you're doing a therapy, and it's, you know, temporary, whatever, fine, maybe let's try it, let's see if it works. But when you're talking about permanent physiological changes, do you not agree, just from an ethical standpoint, that you might want extremely strong evidence of the benefits? And there is no systematic review that states that there is strong evidence of benefits.
Sir, are you aware of how the quality evidence grading system works and how it's applied?
Yeah. Yeah, we've read through it. That's why I'm citing these journals. So which journal says something different? We should have that debate. Tell me a journal that has done systematic reviews that cites different evidence, that cites strong evidence for benefits of these therapies.
The standards of care were developed based on extensive...
You're not telling me any journal. You're not telling me any study. Don't say standards of care.
Yeah. So...
Tell me one.
The standards of care.
That's the standards of care. That's not a journal. That's not a study. That's not an organization. That's not an institution. You're just saying words. Name one study. Yeah. I'm out of time. I yield back.
No, she can't. Yeah. And so what she's saying here by standards of care is basically a wish list of how trans activists want to be treated It is not based on any medicine. In fact, there's a court case right now in Alabama where lawyers have demanded that. So the standards of care is written by an organization called WPATH, the World Professional Association for Transgender Health. Right now in Alabama, a court has pulled WPATH into this case where a young girl wants to be gender affirmed, and that's being taken to court. And the court says, well, we want to know how the standards of care came about. Is it based on any research? Is it based on? And so they have pulled WPATH into that lawsuit. WPATH fought like hell to be removed and said, we don't have anything to do with this. We absolutely don't want to be a part of this. And the court ruled, you do have to show us how you come up with standards of care. They now have sealed that. So they're asking for that ruling to be held off from the public. And now the court is ruling on whether or not that's in the public interest to see, because they cannot provide medical research to show that it is okay to give an 11-year-old puberty blockers. They cannot provide research to show that it does not create medical problems by chopping off healthy breasts or penises or balls. Sorry for the use of the jargon there.
Balls are fine.
Balls?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They just can't. For instance, WPATH considers hysterectomies a medically necessary component of gender-affirming surgical care. Hysterectomies with no age limit. They removed all age limits in last year's WPATH guidelines, even though recent studies show that women who received hysterectomies prior to menopause have an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke. So take a young girl, get rid of that uterus. She doesn't need it because that is medically necessary for gender-affirming care, because a uterus can make you very dysphoric to have one, apparently. So we know that these are dangerous things. So
I think it's kind of interesting. I'm sorry, this is a separate kind of point, but Dan Crenshaw, Eyepatch McCain, who was absolutely in love of going to war in Ukraine and funneling billions of dollars to Ukraine to attack innocent people, loves that, but he's really putting his foot down on gender affirming care. I just find that I just can't wrap my head around these congressmen sometimes.
But those are apples and oranges, I guess. Yeah, yeah, I mean, not for the biopharmaceutical complex.
I loved his
but
questions.
For the
yeah,
the military industrial complex.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
Good old Eyepatch McCain. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, you've derailed me a little bit. So what we're saying here is that if there's going to be medical research into transgender medicalization of the body, it will not be in Australia, and most likely it won't be in the U.S. either, because who's going to fund that? It's wrong think, right? Nobody wants to see those answers, even though we continuously get studies about the effects of hormones. I was reading a book about adolescence recently, talking about like young boys who are late to their growth spurt. And even then, doctors are like, you really shouldn't give them hormones to like bring on a child's growth spurt. That's really dangerous. So we know that hormones are dangerous under the normal course of things, if it's just like a boy who wants to bulk up and be taller by his freshman year. But we're fine to do it for, you know, this sort of cosmetic reason around gender dysphoria. We also know that the studies on this are conclusive. I'm comfortable saying that puberty usually resolves gender dysphoria, and usually those people end up being pretty healthy gay people. So what we're doing is sterilizing gay kids, and we're removing the process that normally handles gender dysphoria. It's normally puberty that cures gender dysphoria, but we're stopping puberty so the dysphoria persists. And we also know conclusively that gender-affirming care does not resolve gender dysphoria. People who do all of this stuff to their bodies still feel dysphoric. It persists. Okay, back to Maura Deeming. She is the Australian politician who really gave impassioned speeches to get the government to look into this, even though it failed. She was expelled from the Victorian Liberal Party recently because she read a speech at a rally, and I'm going to show it to you for a second. Now, she still has not been reinstated to her party. She continues to work as an MP, but even for speaking out on behalf of a Muslim woman's ideology as a gendered woman, as a biological woman, this is the thing that got her expelled from her political party. Watch.
Today, I'm actually going to read out a message from a Muslim friend of mine who was too afraid to be here because of behavior like that. She has said that she came to Australia because she knew that in Australia, human rights were advocated for strongly and she would have protection in Australia. She thought that Australia was a paradise, especially for herself as a woman. And she thought that in Australia, everybody, regardless of religion, ethnicity, sexual orientation, any other belief of any other kind, they got to respect each other's beliefs and boundaries. And now she is devastated to find out that she has less rights in Australia than she did back home. She has said that boundaries are the emotional, mental, and physical fences of every human that are erected in order to protect and maintain our psychological and physical needs, whether it be a human or an animal. And if an animal can understand and respect boundaries, why can't they? She is seeking that the government will do their job and stand up for the rights that she was promised when she came to Australia lawfully and legally. And that she said, if the LGBTQI can have their rights, that's fine. But why does it involve taking away everybody else's rights? Yeah. And she wants to say a big thank you to everybody out here today, and especially Kelly J. Thank you.
Okay, so that speech got her expelled from her political party just for wearing a shirt that said, woman. And speaking on behalf of another woman, there were
I'm surprised they didn't burn her at the stake for that.
Right?
I mean, come on.
It was a real Joan of Arc moment.
Yeah.
So that's why we showed you her website earlier in the show. Says that she's seeking an apology because she shouldn't have been punished for that. But she's still going to continue to... There it is, that all she wants is an apology for that, and she's still going to continue to push for studies into transgender medicine. Now, her ballot did not pass, but it did have support from state opposition in Victoria. It just didn't get enough backing from what they call crossbench parties. So maybe because it was a 16-21 vote, it's fairly close. Something like this may come to pass, but again, probably not in any other country like the United States, at least not for now. So let us know what you think of this in the chat below, because again, it's International Pronoun Day, dude.
I mean, let us know if you think that it's okay for Australia to have voted not to launch a medical inquiry into transgender medicine.
Yeah.
Like, do not want to know what the effects are.
Well, we don't in the United States. We don't want that either. You know, there are some European countries who were really early, like Sweden, on medicalization of gender that are now pulling back. But, you know, a lot of times when there is research like this to be done, it won't get funded because research is funded by the biopharmaceutical industry. And we've talked many times about how a lot of these puberty blockers, they're used to treat cancer patients. They're charged maybe $4,000 a dose, but when they're used to treat transgender patients, it's $9,000. So this is really profitable for the biopharmaceutical industry. They have no reason to fund studies to show anything, untoward about the use of this. So again, let us know what you think. That's going to do it for us today on this International Pronouns Day.
We've got something exciting to announce. Can we show? Yeah, we have the new video loop. Yes. So we have our new merch. If you'd like to support independent journalism, support us here on the show, you can. We keep these prices very low, right at like just a little bit above cost on our store. But we do have a redacted store. If you go to redactedstore.com, we've got all of our... There's a new T-shirt, the non-pacifist peace extremist T-shirt.
I love it.
Which is Natalie's slogan. Which I think is ridiculous. It's hilarious and it's impossible to remember, but that's why you need it on a shirt so you can look down and remember the phrase.
Yes, non-pacifist peace extremists. It's our motto here. at Redacted, and it's meaningful.
When did it become our motto? You chose
to
it.
Me.
Yeah, I know it's meaningful to you. It's a mouthful. You can say it. When someone like wants to walk up to your shirt and read it, they're like, "What does that say?" I like this one. This one's mine. I will not comply.
Grim liked it. He encouraged
Grim,
me.
Who made all the graphics, likes it. But you guys are both nuts then. Friends, don't let friends watch mainstream media. That's our new mug as well. Friends, don't let friends watch the mainstream media. You can go to redactedstore.com and you can support independent journalism. You can pick up one of your t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, stickers for the fall. Perfect fall weather right now to grab one of these. Grab your grab your mug or whatever for Christmas, for the Christmas holiday season as well, and get your non-pacifist peace extremist t-shirt. Flows right off the tongue.
We need a Christmas ornament.
Yeah.
That's coming next.
That's right. You're trying to read this like ball on the Christmas tree. What does that say? Non-pacifist peace extremist. I got to rotate the whole thing around just to read what that says.
It's like a whole dissertation. We'll give it to you another time.
Someone says, it looks communist to me. Looks a commie to me, T-Sin says. No, it's not communist. Just because it's red? Because it's red and
maybe
black?
Because it is a little masculine. I get it. That's all. It's, you know, it's a masculine show. I'm the only lady.
Yeah.
And so, and a lot of our audience is male. We look at our analytics and, you know, but we should get some, maybe more.
I don't think it's like 60%. I think it's like 60% male. Let us know in the chat. How many of you are subscribed to the channel? I see in the analytics, I think it's like 40% of you watch us on a daily are subscribed. 60 to 70% of you aren't subscribed, but you still watch us. So just subscribe, and really helps out the channel. And then also you can turn on that little bell notification, so you'll actually receive a notification when we go live. I think actually now Rumble as well has notifications, because someone was telling me in Rumble that they got their notification for when we're live on Rumble as well. So you can do that there. Cool. As well, and subscribe. So thank you to the over 50,000 of you who are watching us live tonight. We appreciate it on Rumble and YouTube and Twitter. Good to see all 50,000 of you around the world. Thank you guys as we navigate this clown world and try to get through all of the propaganda. Just reading Twitter this afternoon, there's so many more people that want to chime in on the hospital story. And now, just in the past hour, Israel has informed another hospital in Gaza that there are going to be problems with this other hospital, possibly another attack, warning people there. This is what's trending on Twitter right now at this hour, or formerly Twitter. So get prepared, guys, to hear about more hospitals. And then, of course, more people yelling on Twitter overnight while we try to get answers to what is actually happening there. Much love to you guys. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Bye now.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. It happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.